Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
Welcome back to another edition of the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and thank you for joining us this evening. We are super excited and privileged to have on this week a guest, Pete Lawrence of Dynasty League Football and Number Fire. Pete, welcome to the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
Well, Paul, thanks for having me on. This has long been one of my more favorite podcasts to listen to, so it's a privilege to come on and join you today.
Yeah, absolutely. Always have loved interacting on social media and so excited to, kind of pick your brain and just talk through some of these prospects. I mean, it's amazing that week 8 of the college football season is in the books. We're looking ahead to week 9, week 7 of the NFL season. So much to discuss about these NFL rookies, so much to discuss about the NFL draft eligible prospects. And obviously, we always like to take a look at those underclassmen as well for all those people playing in Devy leagues as well. So why don't we get right into it with the first segment of the evening, which is the NFL draft report. Right at the top, I want to start with the quarterbacks. And I've talked about the quarterbacks so much recently on the show that I'm really excited to hear another point of view. Let's start right at the top with Justin Herbert. Obviously, the consensus seems to be that he's the top quarterback eligible in this class. Obviously, this week, the team suffered a tough loss to Washington State. But the rumors seem to be that he's thinking about coming back to college. His brother's going to be a freshman there. He loves the college program. He grew up nearby. He thinks they could maybe contend for a national title next year. What's your take on Justin Herbert? Do you think he's going to end up going back to school? If he doesn't, what do you think? Do you like him as a prospect? Where would you maybe kind of, put him in terms of what you thought about some of the guys last year? Is there a few guys that you like him more than, less than? You know, what's your overall take on Herbert here as what I think is the consensus number one quarterback potentially in next year's draft class?
Well, I absolutely agree with the consensus number one for next year. The issue becomes, I don't think he was better than Mayfield. I don't think he was better than Darnold. I don't feel like he was that much better than Rosen, maybe. Easily Allen. Lamar Jackson, we just haven't seen anything because of the situation where he went to. But when you're talking about he wants to probably stay around, play with his brother next year, and if he's coming out in the 2020 draft class, there's a lot more talented players coming out. Tua automatically is going to jump him.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, I'm intrigued. I feel like we went through this last year with Darnold and Rosen too, where you heard the whispers they were thinking about going back to college. And then Rosen, we kind of figured once they made the coaching change that he was definitely going to go. But there was a lot of talk still that Darnold was going to go back to school. And I kept telling myself, it's hard for these guys to pass up being top five picks. Like, how often do we see guys go back to school when they can be locked and loaded as a top five pick? I mean, the only one I can truly remember off the top of my head is Andrew Luck, when, you know, he could have, you know, came out whenever. And I'm sorry, not even Andrew Luck. I got to go back even further than that. When Peyton Manning was going to come out, and New York Jets here, living in New York, everyone thought the Jets were going to get Peyton Manning. And then he decided to go back to school another year, you know, and then the Jets ended up not getting Manning. And, you know, the course of the NFL history has kind of been changed for it. You know, Herbert knows he's going to be a top five pick. I mean, the New York Football Giants staying on the New York team, they're probably going to be picking in the top five or close to it, and they could easily, you know, be targeting him. And I mean, for Herbert, I mean, it's got to be a little bit intriguing to potentially join up with a team with Saquon Barkley, Odell Beckham, and the playmakers they have there. Is it going to be able, the allure of going to be a top five pick and probably the first or second overall pick in the whole draft? I mean, depending on, you know, who has the pick, does Bosa go one or does Herbert go one and Bosa two? You know, it'll be fascinating to see if he actually stays in school, because you're right, Tua is going to be the consensus top quarterback in the 2020 class. You know, a lot of people are very high on Jake Fromm. You know, Dwayne Haskins is another guy I'll just kind of segue into right here. What's your take on Dwayne Haskins? I know on previous episodes, you know, I first had mentioned, I thought he reminded me a little bit of Deshaun Watson, but in talking to a close friend of the show, Chris Tripodi, you know, we were kind of saying that he doesn't really have that running ability, you know, like a Deshaun Watson, that he plays more from the pocket. And I actually said he reminds me then more of, I think, a Jameis Winston. What do you see for Haskins? Do you think he's a top five, top 10 type, you know, NFL draft prospect whenever he decides to come out? Or do you have some more question marks on him?
I think, yeah, probably you're talking any quarterback in this day and age is likely looking top five, top 10. Him and Herbert were kind of just neck and neck for me. And then this last week happened. Herbert only goes, I think he was like 5 of 11 for 36 passing yards in the first half. Misfired, bad reads, was not looking good against Washington State. So I kind of had him, you know, all right, well, maybe it's going to be Haskins strong. And then Haskins rolled up some great stats, sets new completion and attempt records for Ohio State. But he was, you know, sailing balls, his decision-making looked off. A lot of times you'll see Haskins kind of lock on his number one read, you know, which at Ohio State works, because a lot of times their athletes are going to beat whoever's across from them. But yeah, his decision making seemed off. Purdue's defense was staling, you know, they were kind of giving him different looks. He didn't look solid at all.
Yeah, I mean, Haskins now, you know, it's been a couple games where you've seen some questionable decision making. You know, listen, he's got room to grow. Redshirt sophomore, you know, him, I think I can understand more going back to school, getting another year under his belt before he comes out. But I think the same question could be posed to him. What if Herbert decides to go back to school? What if he announces pretty early that he's doing that? You know, then Haskins can look at this and see an opportunity as, I don't think I'm going to be a top three or top five pick in the 2020 draft, but I can be one right now. Like, am I going to get a lot better at Ohio State? And I think sometimes that's the question. Now, listen, some of these guys, money's not an issue. They love the college life. They're going to stay there. But for some of these guys, it's like, you know, this always happens. We see this every single year. We saw it with Sam Darnold last year. Like, you know, these quarterbacks get nitpicked so much their last year in college football, or what we usually perceive that going to be their final season in college football. You know, and Herbert's going to be the same thing, and Haskins is going to be the same thing. Now, again, I think more people are going to be a little bit more lenient with Haskins as a redshirt sophomore. But if Herbert comes back next year, he's really going to be scrutinized, and every single mistake he makes, you know, is going to be discussed. Like, you know, is he developing? Is he stagnant? Is he, you know, taking a step back? You know, and then he's going to be constantly compared to Tua, and he's going to be compared to Fromm, and he's going to be compared to those guys. While here, he's kind of got the situation all to himself. I kind of agree with you when you compared him to the other quarterbacks. I don't think he's that far off of the Baker Mayfields, the Darnolds, and the Rosen. I'd probably put him right there, you know, a little bit behind those guys, you know, if I was going to rank them. But I think they're all pretty close, that capable to be franchise quarterbacks. You know, I think in today's NFL, athleticism is becoming more and more critical at the quarterback position. O-line play is deteriorating rapidly at the NFL level. Guys got to be able to throw on the move, play off structure. And I think that's one of Herbert's good calling cards. It's one of the favorite things I liked about Sam Darnold. So it's going to be fascinating. if I transition this to the next wave of quarterbacks, I feel like it's been a really tough year for the next wave of quarterbacks. You know, in the summer, I think Jared Stidham, you know, I thought it had potential to be a first round pick. Now, I think he should go back to school. I think at best he's a, you know, a late day two pick, a guy who could be late day two, early day three. Drew Locke was talked about as a potential first round pick. You know, I don't see it with him right now. I think he's more, maybe he could sneak in the back part of late round one, but I think he's more of a day two guy. Will Greer has had some moments. I like his ability to play off structure, but he leaves a lot to be desired at times in terms of his decision making. I've liked some things I see about him. I actually moved him to third on the list now, ahead of Stidham and Locke, but that's more about what I've seen from Locke and Stidham more than, you know, Greer really seizing the opportunity. And then there's some other guys like Nate Staley, Brian Lewerke. There was a lot of people in the draft Twitter community that were high on these guys that were saying, you know, there was some, you know, late round one, Brian Lewerke talk, day two for Nate Staley, you know, and then there's also a guy like Shea Patterson at Michigan. I'm just going to kind of open the floor for any of those quarterbacks that I just mentioned. Any thoughts on any of those? You don't have to go through every single one. Is there one or two that you've really, you know, that you think really is disappointed this year and you've really started to change your tune on? Do you still believe in any of them and think that any of them could still emerge to be like a top 20 first round type talent, or you kind of down on most of those guys?
I think you just kind of described it really well. It's very wishy-washy. There's not a clear cut. That tier below where Herbert or Haskins would be is absolutely muddled. One of them might sneak in, you know, have a pretty combine or something. I mean, Drew Locke, I'm sure when he's going to throw against air, he's got a big-time arm, quick release, but his footwork decision-making is all over the place. And then it becomes, is this the system? It's very, you know, QB friendly. Staley, I like from Iowa. He's, you know, 6'5", 237, kind of that prototype size, good pocket presence. But, you know, level of competition, what are we going to see from him? I don't see him being a first round type guy. There's not a lot out there. You know, maybe a Nick Fitzgerald, somebody who falls in love with, but definitely not a first round second. He's much more of a project. You know, where you're looking for that mobility, he absolutely has that.
Yeah, I mean, and you just brought up a couple guys, and I thought all these guys could be in the mix and maybe emerge this year, and I feel like none of them have taken advantage of it. I mean, Fitzgerald this past week, 8 of 24 for 59 yards. Nate Staley, 11 of 22 for 86 yards. Brian Lewerke, 5 of 25 for 66 yards. It's almost unimaginable, those three stat lines that I just ran off. These were quarterbacks that people were saying could be late first round picks through like round three selections. And it wasn't just like one person here or there. It was a lot of noise. Now, Staley was a guy that I wasn't too high on. He wasn't even in the scouting notebook yet that we put out at Saturday to Sunday. But Lewerke I did over the summer. Fitzgerald I did over the summer. I put those guys as like late round three to early day three type talents. But I thought could maybe emerge if they had a strong, successful year. None of those guys have kind of jumped out. If anything, they've kind of went back the other way. And another guy I'll bring up, I was really excited to watch Ryan Finley this week against Clemson, because he was another guy that was getting some day two hype. And, you know, he looked overmatched in that game. He looked like, you know, like a Nate Peterman type, if, you know, at best, you know, 156 yards, two interceptions. Like, you know, listen, this time for him to look better the rest of the year and the pre-draft process, you know, and guys, you know, it's an ebb and flow up and down. But again, I don't see Finley as a guy who warrants first or second round consideration. I mean, sure, third round teams start to be content in the third round, maybe to even get a backup quarterback spot starter. I mean, we've seen CJ Beathard go in the third round. We've seen Davis Webb. You know, there's a lot of talk that year that Nate Peterman was going to be a third round pick. You know, Kyle Laletta last year, a lot of people thought he was going round three, went, you know, slipped to round four. So maybe some of these guys eventually, you know, an NFL team just kind of gets enamored with them and thinks about them somewhere, you know, in round three, but not a lot of excitement over these guys. And I just don't see it changing. Like, I feel like you're right. The guy who could impress the most in the pre-draft process at its pro day, the combine, could be a guy like Drew Locke. But the difference between a guy like him and Josh Allen, who you know, you as a listener know that, you know, Matt and I kind of pounded the table for that. We did believe in the talent. We saw all the concerns, all viable concerns, but we thought his combination of that arm talent and his athleticism, you know, warranted some Cam Newton like conversations and stuff like that. Locke doesn't even have the athleticism. Like, if you could take Fitzgerald's athleticism and kind of combine it with Drew Locke, you know, then I would say, okay, we got another Josh Allen on our hands that an NFL team could really, you know, start to fall for. But, you know, Locke is such a statue in that pocket. He sees pressure, play breaks down, you know, he really struggles and gets rattled by that. And then some of these other guys, like a lot of these guys, I think you're going to end up going back to school, you know, if they have eligibility left, because I just don't see them being high in demand, you know, as we transition to, you know, the draft season. And to be honest with you, there's not as many teams as usual, I think, who are in desperate need of a quarterback. You know, listen, there'll be a couple that'll get pushed up, you know, if they come out. But, you know, Giants, Broncos, Dolphins, there's a couple teams right at the top that really need quarterbacks. But, you know, five teams last year taking a first round quarterback. You know, years past, teams have gotten their guys. So it's going to be interesting. I think as a whole, this whole draft class is kind of a little bit of a stock down to me compared to where we want. So I actually want to transition to the wide receiver position, because I feel like that's the position that was really getting a lot of hype going into this season, as this was going to be the year where we finally had some of those prototypical guys. What do you kind of make about this wide receiver class in general, whether it's Calvin Harmon, who struggled this week with only 2 catches and 13 yards against Clemson? AJ Brown in first game without DK Metcalf continued to put up good stats, 10 catches, 155 yards and a touchdown. You know, thoughts on those guys, or maybe just the wide receiver class in general, where maybe where before the season started to where we are now, you know, what maybe has changed a little bit in your mind?
I'm still high on quite a few of the wide receivers, and Keel Harry is probably still one of my top guys just because of the size, speed, but he's not looked very strong at all this year either. DK Metcalf, I thought, had made just an incredible jump up this year. It was very disappointing for him to be gone with the injury. Not sure if he even comes back or if he's going to declare. It's hard to say. Probably AJ Brown is going to be one of the top guys. Harry's going to really impress at the combine. Obviously, people are going to fall in love with he's 6'5", the speed, all of his size, what he can do. And I'm sure we'll see some other guys kind of sneak up too.
Yeah, I mean, Harry's an intriguing one because, well, he's got that height measurement and, you know, his ball skills are tremendous. You know, I even have some questions in terms of how fast is he going to run? And we do know that matters. Like, you know, is he going to be a guy that checks off the box by running a 4.5, which for him would be more than good enough, 4.5, 4.52? Or is he going to be a guy that is a little bit slower than maybe we think, and maybe he runs a 4.6, and then all of a sudden we're going to have some concerns about that? You know, I think that's interesting. How fast does AJ Brown run? Now, listen, I think AJ Brown is very much in the Juju Smith mold. I think he's going to be best in the slot. So I'm a little bit less concerned about a guy like AJ Brown, who I think is going to win inside. But even so, like AJ Brown, N'Keal Harry, Calvin Harmon, who I'm a big fan of, I know there's some Julio talk before the season started. I was much more on athletic wise, more like the Hakeem Nicks, Devontae Adams, who, listen, if he became Devontae Adams, that'd be great. Hakeem Nicks had a very, you know, 4 or 5 really strong years before injuries kind of sapped him of the player he was. But I look at this class and, you know, I don't think anyone deserves to be a top 10 guy, which, listen, I felt the same way about the Corey Davis, John Brown, Mike Williams class as well. And the NFL thought very differently. You know, I always thought that draft class should have been much more like the Laquon Treadwell, Corey Coleman year, Josh Doctson, where, okay, they have some talent. I could see those guys being warranted like in the 20s, early 30s, or early second round. And I'm starting to get the same kind of vibe for this wide receiver class. And I'm not sure anybody deserves to be in the first half of the first round. So we'll kind of see how it plays out. A couple other wide receivers, though, I did want to mention. I'm a big fan of Stanley Morgan Jr. out of Nebraska. Now, it's been a tough year for Nebraska, but he finally had a big breakout game this week with 10 catches, 163 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I think he's a really good route runner. It's one thing I always look for when watching film is those guys that are really precise route runners. I think Stanley Morgan is one of those guys who, you know, is going to look good in the pre-draft process because he's crisp route runner, gets in and out of his breaks, shows that separation quickness. So he's a guy on my radar. And then a guy who I'm looking forward to really watching a little bit closer is KJ Hill out of Ohio State. 9 catches, 105 yards this past week. What's your thought on KJ Hill? Like, he's been the guy who I don't think was getting a ton of attention before the season started. You know, I think when we discussed them, we were more focused on like Paris Campbell. But what do you think about KJ Hill and his prospects, you know, in terms of NFL? Is he a guy who, you know, intrigues you? You think he's a little bit more of a good college player, or you think he can make the transition?
Well, it's been interesting now that we see that Ohio State's kind of made this transition. They're throwing the ball a lot more, so we're seeing their wide receivers get more activity, get more looks, which is probably one of the reasons why a lot of us missed on Michael Thomas when he was coming out of Ohio State. He didn't get a lot of the looks playing in that offense, but now you got guys like KJ Hill putting up stats and getting all these targets, and now, hey, we can actually see this guy's pretty talented. He's got some speed that looks pretty nice on tape. You know, a couple of those throws, he really tracked the ball down really well up in the air. All in all, pretty impressive game against Purdue.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy, again, he brings that speed element to the game, can get vertical, can do a lot of different things. That he's a guy who's definitely intriguing. And like you said, a lot of people had questions about Michael Thomas because we just didn't see. And sometimes, again, I'm as strong an advocate as I really, really often do not use stats and statistics in part of my evaluation process because it's so misguided. It's you know, I understand that it's a component of it. And I think I'd be foolish if I didn't even at least take it into account in somewhat, but I really try not to say this guy's going to be, you know, a good player because of, you know, breakout age or market share and stuff like that, because, you know, sometimes it's just opportunity. Like Julio Jones didn't get a ton of opportunity at Alabama. Calvin Johnson didn't get a ton of opportunity at Georgia Tech, and the list goes on and on. I mean, it's why I strongly, you know, as someone who, you know, I know listens to the show, like, you know, Matt and I from the hilltop were saying, we love Alvin Kamara. We don't care about Tennessee. You know, like, we don't care about his statistics. We don't think they're using him right. And, you know, I remember the day Alvin Kamara was drafted by the Saints, I texted Matt. I was like, this is the dream scenario. Like, a coach who is going to maximize his skill set and take advantage of what we thought this kid could potentially be. And I think it's more and more in the NFL, they're starting to maximize talent of players. I think sometimes in college, not enough coaches do it. I think we're starting to see a little bit of a shift at the NFL. You know, guys like, you know, Shanahan and Sean McVay and obviously Sean Payton and, you know, Josh McDaniels with Bill Belichick and the Patriots. You're starting to see more teams take advantage of these guys and find ways that these guys win. But I think at the college game, sometimes we don't see it. They just don't know how to incorporate all their players. So it's nice to kind of see some of these Ohio State wide receivers, you know, their skill sets coming out a little bit more to the forefront this year with, you know, the change in the philosophy in terms of more of a passing offense. So real quick at the tight end position, is it Noah Fant for you and anybody else? And then nobody else? I know for me, I've been harping a lot and I don't think he's going to come out, but I think Irv Smith Jr. is the goods at Alabama. I think he's OJ Howard 2.0. Nick Saban does a tremendous job at keeping these guys there. Like, you know, we all thought OJ Howard was going to come out after that amazing national championship game. He got him to come back again. You know, Irv Smith Jr., similar to Dwayne Haskins, only a redshirt sophomore. But you're starting to see Irv Smith much more involved in the offense than we've ever seen, you know, an Alabama tight end on a consistent basis. Again, part of it's Tua, the passing game, the philosophy and the offense has changed. But, you know, this past week, 5 catches, you know, 50 yards, you know, impressing me to the point where, again, I think Irv Smith Jr. is a guy who could be a late first or early second round pick. I think he's got the athletic profile, the receiving ability, you know, and the size that people want. But, you know, what do you think about him? And is there anybody else that can challenge Noah Fant, could at least be considered a first round pick? Because for me, it's those two guys. And then I think there's a big gap before like a guy like Caden Smith, who I think is more of like a nice player, but I think he's more of like a round three guy. You got Alize Max of the world, you know, Caleb Wilson. I think he's a nice receiving type tight end, you know, from UCLA. But I think there's a pretty big gap for me after those two.
Yeah, I think it's Noah Fant, solid right in as the top guy. He's a stud in every sense of the word, across the board. Irv Smith was a guy, another player where pre-Tua with Jalen Hurd back there, just you didn't see much of it. You didn't get to see him being utilized in with his route running, very, very great route runners, good athleticism. When I really took notice of Irv Smith was passed down the field. You see him clang off about three different guys. It was like a 70-yard reception, fumbled it. I forget who took it into the end zone. But I was very impressed right there, and I started to have to, you know, watch a little bit more Irv Smith, kind of pay more attention to him. I'm a fan of Okwuegbunam, you know.
I forgot about him. Yeah, he's a guy who I think is a day two guy.
Yeah, and I think he could, with that athleticism that he has, a big-time combine, he could sneak himself into that first round if somebody's really hungry for some sort of move tight end, get him off the line. He's not, his blocking's not impressive, but at his size, speed, you know, he can easily create mismatches throughout if you're flexing him.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see a team looking at him and seeing Mike Gesicki. I mean, I think that's the kind of profile that he has. And, you know, Gesicki obviously, you know, tested out ridiculous at the combine himself, not much of a blocker, more of a receiving threat. You know, and again, teams are looking for these mismatches. You know, I personally had Hayden Hurst as my number one tight end last year. I know there was a lot of people that were down on him, but I was even surprised he went in the first round. So there's always guys that kind of sneak up. I think we agree Fant is the guy. To me, very much like 2 years ago, you know, with Ingram and Njoku and Howard, like it's rare when you find a tight end that can check off the boxes of having elite athleticism, receiving production. You know, those are the guys that NFL teams are looking for. You know, I think Fan is much more like those, like that draft class than last year's draft class. I think last year's draft class was a little bit of a lull, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see how high these guys go. And again, Fan is a guy who doesn't put up gaudy stats in college, but that's just kind of like Iowa and their offense and their philosophy. You know, if he was somewhere else, I think we'd see him put up a lot more stats as well. And let's transition to the running backs here to kind of end the NFL draft report segment. Just in general, because it wasn't a ton of guys. I have a couple things down here. But just in general, thoughts on the running back class? You know, obviously, we are all eagerly awaiting the 2020 class, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of those guys in the Devy Slant segment coming up here. But where do you kind of stand on this running back class? Because for me, when the year started, it was a clear top three, you know, in no particular order. You know, David Montgomery, Harris out of Alabama, and then obviously Anderson out of Oklahoma. Obviously Anderson has suffered the injury. You know, Harris, they kind of just have Alabama's always got that timeshare going, you know, and then Montgomery kind of got off to a little bit of a sluggish start, finally had that breakout game last week that I was looking for. I talked about that on the podcast last week. You know, are those the guys in your top three? Is there some other guys, Bryce Love or anybody else that you kind of push up there? And if so, you know, any of these guys, like you think round one guys, or you think most of these guys are more day two types?
I'd say right now, if I were to list my top five, you know, the injury to Rodney Anderson, unfortunate, he was probably my number two. So, I mean, right now, David Montgomery, pretty solid at number one. Likely Miles Sanders, I think, now that he's kind of underneath the shadow and away from Saquon, he comes in there. Daryl Henderson's been looking really impressive out of Memphis, but his size will probably scare away some teams, being only 5'9", just right around 200 pounds. Then, yeah, probably Damien Harrison. I mean, Rodney Anderson is likely just going to be still around number five for me.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, Sanders is the guy who I'm glad you brought him up, because he's been the guy that I've been talking a lot about on these episodes. And he was a guy that was both in Madden I's top 10 in the summer. And we said, you know, he was one of the main guys who we thought really could elevate his stock this year, that, you know, he could be in for a breakout year, really under the radar in terms of national attention, because, you know, Barkley was the guy. But when you really watch some of Sanders, you saw a lot of special talents in him himself. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if he kind of sees the writing on the wall here of it being a little bit of a down running back class, kind of like we were talking about the quarterbacks a little bit. You know, Sanders could look at this draft class and say, you know what, I have a shot to legitimately go in round two, maybe, in this draft class. If I go back to school, if, you know, I'm drawing a blank on their star freshman running back.
Snell?
At Penn State. I'm drawing a blank on him, but it'll come to me in a second. But they obviously have, you know, an elite running back, you know, in the woodworks, you know, at Penn State, who is Ricky Slade. Obviously was one of the top running back recruits in the country last year. So Ricky Slade could cut into his workload a little bit more next year. And then you look at that 2020 class and, you know, how many elite running back talents are potentially in it, that Sanders might say, you know what, I'm putting up a really productive year. It's kind of a down running back class. You know, I'm going to go out now before maybe Slade kind of eats into a little bit of my work. You know, it's a little bit more of, we got to feed both these guys, you know, because they're both really good players. Right now it's kind of, you know, mostly him, you know, and that class that I could see him. I could see him moving himself all the way up, you know, like, you know, into consideration as being one of the top, you know, two or three running backs selected in the draft based on, you know, his athletic profile, his size, his ability to carry heavy workload, you know, good finishing ability. There's a lot about Miles Sanders' game that I like. And then, you know, to be honest with you, that next wave of guys, I think, you know, are all, you know, a little bit on the smaller side that I don't think are going to be able to carry a heavy workload. Is there somebody from that next wave of guys, you know, Bryce Love, Miles Gaskin, Justice Hill, is there any of those guys that kind of stand out to you that you like maybe more than the other? Are you into Devin Singletary, who I know is a big thing, you know, before the year started? Anything else there at the running back position?
Gaskin's been just kind of frustrating. He's been dealing with a lot of injuries, so he's been missing time because of that. He just sat out this last week because of a shoulder injury that he's been dealing with. I like UW's backup, actually, Savon Ahmed, a lot more. I think he's a better running back, and you'll see more of him probably next year. Bryce Love has just kind of been inconsistent this year. I don't know kind of what's going on out there, if that's part of the team's issue. You're not seeing quite as much as we did from him as we did last year. But it's like you said, they're all a lot smaller, kind of more satellite backs, none of the bell cow types, maybe Singletary. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, and again, I was stunned last year when Bryce Love decided not to go out. And I think, you know, I think it's going to end up hurting him a little bit. I think coming off of that, you know, ridiculously elite statistical production, I think there was a strong chance he was like an early third round type pick last year. And I'm not sure, maybe he could still get there again because people are looking for those, you know, those guys that kind of complement something else that they have there. And he offers that. But the problem with Love is that he just doesn't offer anything in the receiving ability. So as a running back, he profiles perfectly as that change of pace, home run type guy. But most NFL teams want that guy to be able to be an effective player in space out of the passing game as well. And I think that's the biggest detriment to Bryce Love's game. And I was hoping to see improvement from in that regards, but it's just not something that Stanford really utilizes much. So it's not something we're really ever going to get a solid feel for whether or not that's something he can do and be really effective. He's obviously not going to be a guy, you know, that is a great route runner like we've seen some of these running backs come into the NFL from the running back position, but we at least wanted to see him maybe be serviceable. And, you know, they just don't really give him a lot of opportunities there. So I think Bryce Love's stock is definitely down a little bit compared to obviously where it was last year at this time. And same thing with Gaskin, another one. I think he might have should just came out last year. I think he probably would have been like an early day three pick. So maybe somewhere in round four. And, you know, I think he might've hurt his stock more this year, you know, and when, you know, by going back to school, these satellite guys, you know, like they're hit or miss, you know, in the college game, they're being given, you know, work, you know, heavy, heavy workloads. And, you know, it's easy for these guys to break down. We've seen Gaskins break down. We've seen Bryce Love battle injuries, you know, like they're not going to get those 20 to 30 carries at the NFL level. But I think it's hurting them a little bit as a whole at the college game. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, if more running backs, especially that are built like them, kind of think about the big picture a little bit in terms of that when they're making their, you know, NFL decisions. One running back I wanted to bring up, and I just kind of wanted to see if you had any takes on him, because he's a guy that I really, you know, have high on my list to watch sooner rather than later, because, you know, I think it was Dane Brugler is a big fan of him and some other guys. Have you seen much of Zach Moss out of Utah?
Even in the Pac-12, I haven't gotten to watch a whole lot of him. Just like you said, though, when Dane Brugler starts mentioning him, it kind of, you know, perks up your ears and, you know, take notice. I'll get to see him here in a little bit when they're, you know, with the UW games and everything. It's tough. It's not the most power-packed team that, as far as talent around him. So they can kind of scheme against him and take away some of his aspects. But he's got some neat traits as a running back coming out of the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, at 5'9", 215, he's a junior, so obviously he doesn't have to declare. But again, I think we might see some surprise juniors enter the draft this year as running backs because they know what maybe is potentially in the woodworks in 2020. And listen, we said that years ago, and then things change. You know, it's impossible to predict too far out. Like, but at the same time, if he has a really successful year, you know, again, Dane Brugler, as good as anybody in terms of, you know, A, evaluating, two, ears to the ground, hearing things, you know, when he's talking him up, he's hearing that from some other places, and he's got a great eye for talent as well. So he's definitely got it. I feel like I got to watch sooner rather than later, really get a close eye on, get him in the scouting notebook, because he's a guy that, you know, could be emerging, you know, as maybe as one of the top 10 running backs in this class based on, you know, some of the guys who maybe have disappointed a little bit this year. You know, like, I was hoping to see more at the Demaryius Crockett this year. I haven't really seen it. Travion Williams, I thought maybe he was going to take a step up. I'm not a huge Benny Snell guy. I think he's a little bit more of a two down plotter. LJ Scott. So, like, I feel like there's a lot of guys like that, that, you know, there's some room for somebody to leapfrog them and jump up above them. So it'd be interesting to see if a guy like Moss can do that. So with that said, let's transition over to some underclassmen talk here and start up the Debbie Slant segment. So a couple guys want to pick your brain and then just kind of open it up for you to, if there's any guys that you really, you know, have been impressed and have jumped off the page at you. We talked again about seeing these teams and their offensive philosophies change. Are you as big a fan as I am watching Jerry Jeudy this year? Because he's a guy who I think, you know, before this year started, people were like, yeah, he's a solid, he's a good player. But I don't know if he was as high in terms of Devy rankings, in terms of people's opinion on him, his take, as maybe he should be. And every single week that I, you know, get a chance to watch these Alabama games, I walk away saying this guy is really, really good, that maybe he's not, you know, Julio Jones good, but he could be Calvin Ridley good. And, you know, I'm a huge Calvin Ridley fan. And for me to say that, you know, speaks volumes on how much I like the player. Are you as big a fan of Jeudy as I am? Or if not, maybe, you know, what are some concerns that you maybe still have about him?
Nothing really concerned about Jeudy. I mean, still young, but he's still a couple of ticks above Calvin Ridley. And that's just mostly because we never saw Calvin Ridley with a good quarterback. You know, you could see some of the stuff as far as, you know, good route runner, that, but now you add in, Tua and you get this offense really going. You can do a lot more. Jeudy's able to showcase his talents deep, intermediate, all across the field. And yeah, he's really showing up. I wish I had invested a lot heavier in Jeudy before this season. I think he was still sitting around in a couple of my Devy leagues just because of that kind of, you know, reluctance for a lot of people to target Bama wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's been going on forever. And, you know, Alabama had a lot of success, but I saw from the national championship last year that this was just going to be a silly season for Alabama. Like, you know, their defense, their offensive line, their D-line, their run game, and then to have a quarterback that can do now what Tua does, it was just going to be a totally different level. I'm fascinated to see if anybody could even give them a game this year, honestly. If we stay with the wide receivers, I've talked a lot on here about T. Higgins, so I don't want to get too much into him. I'm a fan of his game. Is there any... If you look at the underclassmen wide receiver, is there a couple names that, you know, you really hone in on as these are your favorites? If you can get them in every Devy league, you know, these would be the guys that you were targeting at the wide receiver position?
Well, you know, being a UW fan, being out here in the Pacific Northwest, Jones from UW, he's been not, you know, you're probably not seeing anything big because he's not huge statistically, but great catches, great body control. You've seen a couple just one-handed really nice snags, and he's not, you know, he's not playing just schmucks a lot of time. He's gone up some good competition, went against Auburn, scored, and he's seen a lot of the best coverage kind of rolled over on him. You know, you go down to USC, you've got Pittman, you've got, I'm forgetting the other wide receiver down there right now. But I thought Michael Pittman has really raised it to another level this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, Pittman is a guy, I think I mentioned on the last podcast, that Bill Ladin, one of our former co-hosts here, was a huge, huge Michael Pittman fan. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, he just didn't kind of develop as early as I think many expected. And now we're starting to see, you know, a little bit of a resurgence and a little bit of a breakout here, you know, a little bit after the fact. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, for a while he was readily available in Devy leagues, you know, to be had on the cheap because, you know, he really wasn't showing much in terms of development, in terms of turning into that player, you know, that we thought maybe he could potentially be. So it's fun to watch these guys and kind of see guys that, you know, we were really high on, we liked a lot, you know, basically coming out of high school, watching their film, and we were excited for them, you know, as freshmen. And then they kind of sometimes lose a little bit of luster, whether it's production, whether it's opportunity, combination of both or an injury. You know, it's nice when we see these guys kind of reemerge and start showing why we like them so much in the past. If we go to the running back position, you know, obviously, you know, the running back class, you know, next year, really special from, you know, DeAndre Swift and Cam Akers, you know, J.K. Dobbins, you know, the list is extensive next, you know, for next year. Jonathan Taylor, A.J. Dillon, Travis Etienne, you know, the list goes on and on. It's kind of been a weird year, though, for that group. While as much as the Devy community, I don't think has lost any confidence in a lot of those guys, they really haven't had, you know, the monster statistical seasons that I think many people were expecting. Have you changed your tune on any of these running backs? Is there been anything that's kind of happened this year that has maybe, you know, dimmered the light a little bit on your excitement level for any of those guys I just mentioned? The Akers, Swift, Dobbins, up from Najee Harris in the mix, Jonathan Taylor, A.J. Dillon. Has there been anybody that's kind of taken a step back in your eyes? And on the flip side, has there been anybody that maybe has elevated, you know, what you thought about them as these years progressed?
Nobody's really taken a step back. Swift, it sounds like, has been dealing with something of a hamstring injury. And Holyfield has come in very impressive. And anytime at Georgia, there's so much talent in that running back room, you have to keep splitting carries. You saw it with Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, and then DeAndre Swift came in. And so they've got a coaching staff where they want to keep these guys around. You got to get, you know, opportunities from them. And it just kind of leads to that just kind of strange stat line. Maybe they're not just getting kind of into a groove because it's, you know, having to come out, come in, different roles. Cam Akers is still my top guy. That Florida State team is just so bad. He can't really do anything. That offensive line is horrendous. Harris, both of them at Bama, you know, same kind of thing as Georgia has. A lot of talent in that room. People just kind of different roles coming in and out. Eno Benjamin out of Arizona State is one of the players who I've been really high on. I think he's made a huge jump this year. Balaj is no longer there. He's become the pretty much de facto back, and he has looked great every time I've gotten the chance to watch some Arizona State games.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guy right there, under the radar guy, that hasn't been getting a lot of attention. Love hearing that. I want to pick your brain on one other guy out there, especially since I know you're out there on the West Coast. I was a big fan when I saw him last year play in, you know, in combination with Ronald Jones, but Stephen Carr doesn't look like the same player this year when I've seen him play. Any take out there in terms of what's going on with him? He just doesn't. Is it the team? Is it the O-line? Is it, you know, do you think it's him? Maybe last year he was playing above his talent level, because I thought he was a guy that once Ronald Jones left, I thought he was going to kind of really emerge to be a big time player that was going to push his way up to maybe not at that Akers, Swift, Dobbins tier, but I thought maybe he was going to at least push his way into that next tier where like guys like Najee Harris, Jonathan Taylor, A.J. Dillon were. And if anything, he's kind of fallen further away from that group than kind of raised himself into that. Anything you've seen on him? Is it him? Is it the team? Is it a combination?
I'd say it's a little bit of the combination. The O-line doesn't look as strong. But I also want to say that Carr seems to be pressing a lot. He's not. There's times where you can see a hole and maybe it's a short gain, but he seems to want to try to push it a little bit more, see what else can be there. And he hesitates or he's looking somewhere else. I think it's just more that he's trying to do too much. He's trying to play outside of himself in the system right now. Whereas last year it was simple. He'd come in, spell Ronald Jones, hey, this is your role. You know, just give us something, turn it into a big play kind of thing.
Yeah, and one last running back I wanted to ask you about is I've been really impressed with Travis Etienne out of Clemson. I think he deserves to be kind of discussed in that second tier that I was just talking about, the Jonathan Taylor, you know, Najee Harris, you know, AJ Dillon. You know, where do you kind of fall on Etienne? Obviously, he didn't have a monster year last year as a freshman like those other guys did, like Jonathan Taylor and Dillon, and those guys put up such great stats, and Najee Harris was so highly regarded, and you know, he went to Alabama and everyone thought, you know, Eddie Lacy 2.0, and you know, Eddie Lacy might be a joke now, but once upon a time was a great player there. What is your take on Etienne? Do you think his talent level is on par with those guys that I just talked about, the Taylors, the Harris, the Dillons of the world? Is it higher than that? Is it lower? What do you think about Etienne?
I think all the other guys are much better pure runners as far from the running back standpoint, but none of them offer that upside that Etienne does as far as a pass catching side. I think that is going to be his big time mark at the next level, where he's going to go to a team, maybe not quite Alvin Kamara, or is, you know, another big time pass catching back, but what he can do out of the backfield and, you know, be moved around in that kind of a manner, I think he's going to be huge. Travis Etienne, especially in the Clemson offense, as Trevor Lawrence gets more and more comfortable, we're going to see that team just continue to take off and maybe be the only team that can kind of give Bama a run.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they might be the only team that truly could give Alabama a game this year. And to finish out the Devy Slant report, there's two quarterbacks out there on the West Coast. I've talked a lot about Trevor Lawrence. He's going to be the Andrew Luck of the next couple of years, that we're just going to be talking about him every single year, waiting and waiting and waiting for him to be, you know, draft eligible. But two guys that I know Matt was really high on last year when they were freshmen, and you know, when he wrote the freshman report and we were watching high school stuff and talking about them coming in, what's been your early impressions from what you've seen? Obviously, there's been some struggles from JT Daniels out there at USC, and then obviously Dorian Thompson-Robinson at UCLA. Any thoughts on either of those two really young quarterback prospects? Are they guys that you think are going to emerge to be guys that down the line we're talking about as you know, legitimate draft prospects? Is that what you think, or is it too early, too soon to tell with those guys?
It's still a bit early. I think if either of them were talking about draft prospect, it's going to be JT Daniels. Both right now dealing with injuries, and it doesn't sound like Daniels will play this week from last I had heard. Still not sure on that. It's obviously still early in the week. Dorian Thompson, he's 6'1", undersized. He came out with a lot of hype about this dual threat, and I haven't seen much of the running ability, and I don't know if that's maybe more of the coaching staff wanting to keep him within the pocket, develop more as a passer before they start utilizing that, you know, with Chip Kelly and his offense. The UCLA offense on the whole just hasn't looked very good. But I haven't been overly impressed with Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Daniels much more so, but he also has a much higher level of talent around him. You know, we talked about Pittman, Tyler Vaughn, Carr, all those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be fun. This quarterback, incoming freshman class had a lot of guys that were really intriguing. I mean, I think one of the most fascinating stories is going to be what happens at Georgia, because Jake Fromm, really good prospect. You know, a lot of people think he's a first round type caliber NFL quarterback prospect, but you know, Justin Fields is one of the best quarterback prospects in, you know, right up there with Trevor Lawrence as, you know, two of the best quarterback prospects in quite some time. I'm not sure Fields is just going to stay there, you know, and say, okay, I'll wait a whole nother year. You know, we've seen, you know, guys make decisions. So I think that's going to be one of the most fascinating things to kind of see how it plays out the rest of this year. But then more importantly, you know, next year during, you know, does Fields decide to stay? Does he get, you know, a little bit antsy and want to transfer? You know, do they potentially make it an open, you know, competition, you know, next spring, you know, spring ball and stuff like that? So it's going to be fun to kind of watch and see how that kind of plays itself out with such a high level prospect there, but then another one might even be more talented, you know, in the woodworks coming up as well. So let's transition this to the tail of the tape when we kind of take a look ahead to this upcoming week set of games and talk about some matchups, prospects we're looking forward to. I know one game right at the top, it's not a sexy game, but I'm excited to watch the Baylor-West Virginia game. A lot of individual prospects that I want to have my eye on this game. Obviously, Will Greer, we talked a little bit about him before. David Sills, he's a guy who I'd love to get your take on. I know the stats are gaudy. I just don't know if I see a guy who's going to translate to be a top-level NFL prospect. You know, maybe I'm scared off by last year, the Alan Lazards, the Simi Cobbs, the Jill Scotts of the world, but that's the kind of vibe I get with David Sills, that I have separation questions in terms of him creating separation, athletic concerns a little bit. And then on the Baylor side, Denzel Mims and Jalen Hurd. Obviously, Jalen Hurd, the former running back from Tennessee, converted to basically slot wide receiver, and Denzel Mims. Anything in that game that any prospect you're looking forward to watching? And if not, really maybe just your thoughts quickly on David Sills.
I 100% agree on Sills. The stats are huge, part of the system. Interesting story, making the conversion over to wide receiver. But you hear people talk about him as a first round wide receiver. And if we're talking about AJ Brown, Harry, Kelvin Harmon, DK, you know, Metcalf post injury, what are those guys going to be? I don't see Sills jumping them just on what he's done. I'd like to see more consistency out of the QB player with Greer. Just some games he'll be on, and then the next game he's thrown into double, triple coverage, making bad reads, staring players down. And like you said, I'd like to see, more out of Hurd's. What is he going to do at the next level? Team's going to maybe draft him, trying to decide wide receiver, running back, flex him around. What can we do with him? So,
yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. Another game that got a lot of individual prospects is Clemson, Florida State. Obviously, we know Florida State really has struggled this year. I mean, that goes without saying. But in this game, I'm kind of excited to watch and see, you know, again, how does Cam Akers look? He came off a really productive week this past week, 98 yards, 2 touchdowns. That's about as productive a day as we've seen from him. I still don't think they get him involved in the passing game as much as they should. I am a president of the DeAndre Francois fan club, so it has been a rocky road this year for me. I still believe that he's got some talent. I know their O-line play is terrible. At times he makes some poor decision making, but when I saw him a couple years ago before he suffered the injury, I saw a guy that was willing to push the ball down the field, played with good moxie, good poise, good competitive toughness, was willing to pull the trigger. I'm still a fan of him, and again, I'm interested to see how, listen, I don't expect, you know, it's that Clemson game 2 years ago that I watched that he literally got demolished on a regular basis, but he just kept coming back from it and making plays to keep them in that game. And, you know, this week it's probably going to get real ugly real fast in that game. And I'm assuming that D-line is really going to give him fits all game. But again, I'm interested to see how he looks in this game. On the other side, obviously, Ethan, we talked about T. Higgins, I briefly mentioned before. How does Trevor Lawrence look? Florida State still has some talent on their defensive side. I mean, this was a team that was still, you know, I think preseason top 20 or whatever. So how does Trevor Lawrence look, you know, in this game? Again, Clemson, Florida State, a big rivalry game, obviously not so much this year, but they've had some great battles in the past. It was interesting to see Florida State could kind of get up for this game and push Clemson a little bit. Anyone in particular in that game that kind of stands out that you're looking forward to their matchup?
I like how you were talking about Francois just a few years back. When you look at him, he's put on some nice new muscle now. He's looking a lot thicker. Everything about him that you enjoyed kind of when he was a freshman, as he came in, it's still there. He still throws a really nice ball, but how much is this playing behind this offensive line going to impact him long-term? Does he start to, you know, mechanics break down because if he's looking down too much, does he trust himself in the pocket enough? It's going to be, like you said, it's going to be ugly. That Clemson defensive line is stellar. It's just packed full of superstars and top, you know, draft talent. And this Florida State offensive line has not been doing anything to help him out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that, you know, he can move a little bit and he can make some plays with his legs, but he's not a running quarterback. I think that was one of the things that I really liked about him a couple of years ago is that he didn't look to run. He would go through his progressions. He, you know, he would wait and, you know, take a hit right as he, you know, unleashed a pass. And that was the thing that really stood out about him. To be honest with you, I know a lot different in terms of size and stature, but I thought 2 years ago he played at Florida State very similar to how Jameis Winston looked when he was there, that he would just stay in the pocket, go for progressions, take a pounding, make the throw, you know, as pressure was barreling down. That, you know, obviously I understood that he wasn't going to be as highly regarded as Jameis Winston because he didn't check, you know, the prototypical size, height, you know, type boxes. He was a little bit thinner and a couple inches shorter. But I like his demeanor and the way he plays the game. So I'm rooting for him as a guy who's been a longtime Florida State fan and have been a fan of Francois. You know, I'm hoping that he looks pretty good in this game and Florida State kind of, you know, maybe shows up and gives a competitive game there. I'm doubting it to say the least, but I'm kind of hoping for the best there. Iowa Penn State, we've talked about some of their players today, but you know, what is it, anything in that game kind of jump out off the page at you? I know there's a couple things I'm looking for, but definitely some intriguing guys in that game. Anything in particular in terms of prospects you're excited to watch for in that game?
You know, just seeing some more Miles Sanders, see what the Penn State offense does against Iowa. And then, you know, we talked about Iowa pretty well as far as Stanley coming out of there and see what he can do against the Penn State defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the Penn State side, I know you talked about Miles Sanders. Again, Trace McSorley is one of those interesting guys that he's going to be a great college quarterback, but he's not a guy who I think is going to, you know, transition, you know, to being an NFL quarterback. I understand we're starting to see the narrative change a little bit, you know, for NFL quarterbacks are not as worried about, you know, the size as much, but I just don't see the arm talent with Trace McSorley. I think, you know, I think I heard it on one of the other podcasts. I don't know if it was Locked On or Draft Dudes that they brought Trace McSorley and said, you know, could he be a Taysom Hill type player? And, you know, listen, Taysom Hill is kind of opening the door for some of these, you know, type of quarterbacks that are very athletic and can do different things. So it'd be interesting if that does open kind of a door. We know there's a copycat league that, you know, if a guy like McSorley is kind of looked at as a guy who could maybe do some things that Trace McSorley is doing for New Orleans. Obviously on the Iowa side, again, I was excited to watch Nate Stanley last week and then he kind of really disappointed and go back to the well here. You know, if I remember correctly, I think he had a really impressive game last year against Penn State. I could be wrong on that, but I think he had a really good game last year against Penn State. It'd be interesting to see how he looks this week as well. In that one. So that'll be a game that I'll definitely make sure I'll be watching or set the DVR for. What about Florida, Georgia? A couple prospects on in that game that I think could be intriguing. Anybody from your perspective in that game that you're excited to kind of watch in that setting?
Just as always, any of the Georgia running backs. Continue to see what happens with Fromm, see if Justin Fields can get some play. When we talked about Justin Fields earlier, it was so frustrating that, you know, you saw him at the Elite 11 going on NFL.com. And then, you know, I was really excited. Where is he going to go? And he decides to go to Georgia. And, you know, at that time you were talking, they still had Eason was there and Fromm. So it was already a really crowded situation. I wish he would have gone somewhere else where he could have come right in and started, you know, competitive nature. Maybe he believes he's the best. He's going to take it over anyways. On the Florida side, had nothing. I'm overly, maybe see if Tyree Cleveland, you know, a guy who I liked a couple of years back, see if he's still around, see what he can do.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll throw in the hat there. Calvin Ridley's little brother, Riley Ridley. I'm a fan of him. He's a guy who was in my top 10 before the season started. And anytime I've watched Georgia, I've came away pretty impressed with him. Again, their running game is the big core of their team. So maybe he doesn't get as many opportunities, but when he gets opportunities, he makes plays. I think he's a good route runner. I think he can win at all three levels of the field. I think he's a guy who stock has been climbing ever since last year's national championship game. I think NFL teams are going to be intrigued intrigued with him. I believe he had some off the field issues earlier in his college career that obviously that'll be something NFL teams look closely at. But on the field, I'm kind of a fan of his game. So I'm going to be excited to continue to watch him any opportunity I get to kind of see if he's one of those guys that kind of push his way up the radar a little bit, maybe be a day two type guy and kind of see how he looks in this one. And then one other game I'll mention, NC State, Syracuse. Kind of how does Ryan Finley bounce back after that poor game against Clemson last week? Obviously, NC State was undefeated going into that game, really struggled against Clemson. Looking forward to seeing if Finley bounces back and Calvin Harmon. I think this could be a week that Bolton and bounce back, but Syracuse is a little bit of a feisty team, so that could be a game that's a little bit maybe closer than some people expect. Any thoughts about NC State, Syracuse? I know I mentioned them before. Is Calvin Harmon a guy that you're a big fan of, a little bit lukewarm, somewhere in between? What's your take on Harmon?
Oh, big fan of Harmon. Just so much he can do, you know, across the board. He can get you anywhere on the field. Just kind of the injury stuff that he's dealt with throughout his time was a little bit concerning. But hey, you know, stay healthy, come out, have a good combine, get yourself noticed.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that said, we're going to turn to the final segment of the night, and that is the NFL draft report, where we take a look at the prospects in their first season there in the NFL. We kind of do like a stock up, stock down, just kind of give our general overview and thoughts of a lot of the relevant offensive skill rookies in their first season in the NFL. Kind of talk about the quarterbacks to get us started here. Obviously, a little bit of a tough week. Josh Rosen really struggled last Thursday night against the Denver Broncos, couple pick sixes. Sam Darnold played absolutely atrocious against Minnesota the other day. I think it was 4 or 5 turnovers in that game. Baker Mayfield was pretty solid against Tampa Bay. The game looked like it was going to overtime, and then went into overtime, and then looked like Baker was going to get the ball back late in overtime to try to win it, but a 59-yard field goal ended Baker's day. Josh Allen is obviously still hurt. Lamar Jackson, we saw a little bit of a sneak peek of where he came on the field, got a quarterback run for a touchdown as well. But maybe not so much this week, but a little bit more big picture. Any thoughts on the quarterbacks, what we've seen so far from them this year? Has anybody impressed you or disappointed in any way more or less than maybe what you were expecting?
I think you were talking about it on last week's episode with just Sam Darnold's personality, just very balanced. I think you know, you were talking about it. He fits in perfectly with New York. Doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low, does a really good job being balanced, and he's going to need that. Not a lot of talent around him at the offense. Baker Mayfield, I think he's developing more and more. You'll see more Baker Mayfield and what he can do, hopefully, when Hugh Jackson is gone, unless Baker Mayfield somehow saves his job. Josh Rosen, it's another one where it's such a bad offense around him. I don't think we're going to really know what he is, and hopefully they don't set him back playing behind that offensive line. You know, they have the new offensive coordinator. We're going to see Byron Leftwich come in over Mike McCoy. So ideally we're going to see, you know, more than just David Johnson up the middle, start seeing some different looks and just different play calling, and you really utilize the talents that are around Rosen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, but if we were talking about a deep dynasty league, the four quarterbacks I mentioned and Lamar, is there one that if you were trying to go out right now and acquire, maybe it's a super flex league, so quarterbacks are a little bit more valuable. Is there one that you would say, you know what, I still want to try to get him on my team now? Is it a guy who's struggling like Rosen? Is it Lamar Jackson, who we kind of got to wait it out a little bit? Is it Baker, who I think's, you know, probably most solidified in his role, his, you know, playmakers as he has? Is there one that you would say, yeah, this would be my guy if I was going to go out and try to get one of these quarterbacks for my dynasty team?
So I think Mayfield is probably at the top, but if we're talking about anyone else, maybe target someone like Rosen. His value probably dropped a bit. People are looking at that offense and the issues. Who knows if Steve Wilks if he makes it through and into a second season. You're going to still have David Johnson there. He seems to be really flowing well with Christian Kirk. Maybe Fitzgerald is there, but It's an easy fix over in Arizona where you can target for the offensive line, sign a few players, what you can, and then draft some more talent around him, go after a wide receiver in this draft class or an offensive lineman. And that's going to just continue to help Rosen.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I think now's the time to try to get one of these guys. If you look at your landscape, your dynasty team, and you see a need for the quarterback, whether and you're like, okay, people love acquiring draft picks. Listen, I love draft picks more than anyone, but I think their value in trades is higher than what it actually really ends up being all the time. So with that said, when we got like Darnold coming off last week's game, Rosen coming off last week's game, still the uncertainty. What if Joe Flacco leads the Ravens deep into the playoffs? Are we sure they're going to go the Kansas City Chiefs route and, you know, and discard Joe Flacco and give the reins over to Lamar Jackson? Like, you know, Lamar Jackson's quarterback ability, you know, I don't think is on the same level of what, you know, Kansas City thought of Patrick Mahomes and, you know, had everything perfectly lined up for Mahomes to take over. So we already talked about the quarterback class for this upcoming draft. Like, what if Herbert goes back? What if Dwayne Haskins goes back? This quarterback class could be really lacking that if you need a quarterback, you might say in a super flex league, I offer someone a first round pick right now and go get one of these guys. You know, a team might be willing to do it. Maybe, you know, maybe this team has, you know, a little bit of excess at quarterback. Maybe they say, you know what, I'd rather take the first round rookie pick, you know, and deal one of these guys away. Be a little aggressive if you're trying to fill in. If it's not a two quarterback league or a super flex, but you're maybe looking a little bit further down the line, maybe you could even offer something less. Maybe you could offer a late second round rookie pick, you know, or a third round rookie pick for one of these guys that are struggling if it's just a one quarterback league. But use the opportunity now to try to buy low on these guys. I don't think anything they've done in any of their scenarios makes me think less of these guys than when I thought about them when the year started. These are natural, you know, ups and downs of a rookie quarterback. I wouldn't make any rash judgments on any of these guys based on what we've seen out of Rosen, based on what we've seen out of, you know, Darnold, you know, even in the limited sample that we've seen out of Josh Allen. I mean, look what he's playing with there in Buffalo. Like, so if you're a believer, and to be honest with you, I think Josh Allen's got some sneaky fantasy upside because of that running ability. I think he's very much going to be used like Cam inside the 5 and 10 yard line. So, I mean, that those are some free points, you know, that he can get you down the line as well if you could ever get the passing game going and they can get some playmakers for him. So it's going to be fun to watch his quarterbacks kind of grow and develop. If we turn to the running back, kind of a busy week for the running backs here. You know, obviously, breakout game for Kerryon Johnson this week. You know, I loved him as a player. He was, you know, I think my number four running back in this draft class. I wish they would just give him the reins completely, especially near the goal line, but LeGarrette Blount continues to hurt his value a little bit. But I'm a big fan of Kerryon Johnson. I think it was last episode or the one before. I like Kerryon Johnson better than any running back that's going to be draft eligible for this upcoming draft class. So if you need a running back, I'd offer my first round rookie pick right now for Kerryon Johnson. That's how much I believe in his game. Nick Chubb now with Carlos Hyde traded gets the reins in Cleveland. He looked pretty good this week. 14 carries, I think it was 80 yards and a touchdown. He's another guy. I think that offense is only going to get better and better. So I think Chubb is the guy who's going to, you know, I think Chubb though is going to be a little bit more in the last year, previous year, Jordan Howard mold. You know, I think that's going to be, we're going to live and die a little bit with touchdowns for Nick Chubb, but I think he is a really good runner. I think he's going to put up some, you know, really good stats there moving forward. I think he's got 10, 12 touchdown upside. So it's nice to see him kind of take over that lead in the backfield. Philip Lindsay continues to show that he is going to be one of the better undrafted free agent running backs we've seen in a while. Really impressive performance by him last week on Thursday Night Football. Now Royce Freeman's hurt a little bit. When I watch Philip Lindsay, I understand people get concerned about the size, but to me, he's got a little Devontae Freeman in him. He runs really tough. He's great at picking up the blitz. That was something Matt and I talked about when we were previewing the Shrine game last year and Philip Lindsay was there, about how good he was in pass protection. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's got a physical stature about him for a guy his size. Like, I think he's only like 5'9", 190, but he doesn't look thin, and he plays, and he's got the quickness and, you know, the burst. I'm a big fan of his game. If people are still worried about Royce Freeman, I wouldn't be. I'd offer a second round rookie pick right now for Philip Lindsay, even if it was going to maybe be an early second round rookie pick, because I think, you know, he's going to be a productive player moving forward. Saquon Barkley, not much to talk about there. Number one or number two player in all of Dynasty at the running back position with Todd Gurley. Sony Michel, knee injury. It doesn't sound like it's going to be too serious, but the ramifications, I think, are more big picture. Another knee injury is a little concerning. And then Ronald Jones scored a touchdown. Penn and Barber might be nicked up a little bit, so Jones might get a little bit more work. But right now, his value really low. Rashard Penny even lower. What's your take on the running back position? You can kind of go with bring up any of the guys I mentioned or anybody else. If I left anybody out, you want to bring up any thoughts on the position?
I think you crushed it with the going over all the rookies there. Philip Lindsay's looked very talented, very decisive. He sees it. He goes right for that hole and he hits it full steam. No wasted movement. Nick Chubb was a player who I was very high on, so I'm very excited to see him get the chance to be the number one guy over in Cleveland. Sony Michel, like you said, it's a little worrisome. You know, this is the knee that was supposedly the issue. It's also the knee he dealt with all summer. So doesn't sound like it's anything major, no structural, maybe just a 2-week kind of thing at the most. But it's Saquon Barkley is, like you said, probably the second running back overall in all of fantasy right now. And that's on a really rough New York Giant team.
Yeah. I mean, you imagine like a legitimate offensive line, like an average offensive line and average quarterback play right now. You just wonder what Barkley could be doing. Like, and listen, I was 100% on team draft the quarterback. You don't pass up a franchise quarterback. And listen, I still think they should have taken a quarterback, but every time you watch Barkley play, and now as you see the Giants still struggling and realize just how bad of a team they are, I can't even imagine what a quarterback. We talked about what it is for Josh Rosen right now in Arizona. Could you imagine Josh Rosen or Darnold with the Giants and take Saquon Barkley off the team? So you don't have Saquon Barkley too. So you have no run game producing anything. You have Wayne Gallman maybe as your starter, because they weren't going to, if they passed on Saquon Barkley, they weren't taking a running back at the top of round two. I mean, offensive line, Will Hernandez or who the best one left was always going to be the pick there. So if you had this offensive line, no Saquon Barkley, I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, what the confidence level would be for this rookie quarterback. Now, maybe they would have just had Eli still in there, kind of taking the beating for the team, and then waiting in the wings would have been the rookie, and maybe that's what they would have done. But listen, you keep watching Barkley play, and you do truly realize, like, maybe he wasn't worth the second pick, but maybe he is, because he's not Leonard Fournette, who was the fourth pick, who I thought was a little bit of a reach. He's so special and such a generational talent that he brings so much more. Like, you can't just think about him as a running back. You got to look at him and say the offensive impact that Barkley makes, is it on a level with any other offensive player in the NFL? You know, Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown, Todd Gurley. And I think the answer is a resounding yes, based on how many ways he can win. So I think the people who keep harping on, you can't take a running back over a quarterback. Listen, I get that. If you want to change that narrative to you can't take an offensive skill player over a quarterback, okay. But I think the argument about the running back has to be lost, because Barkley is so much more than that. And he's so special of a player that he's kind of making me say, okay, yeah, we need a quarterback, but I'm really excited to have him on our team. It's now up to the Giants to figure out the quarterback position. And sure, if Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen becomes Tom Brady or Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning, you know, sure, then it's going to look ridiculously bad. But if they become Matt Ryan or Phillip Rivers, and Saquon Barkley becomes one of the greatest running backs in the history of the sport, then I don't know how bad of a decision it was, especially if the Giants can figure out the quarterback position in the next year or two. So it's going to be a topic that's discussed forever and ever, 10, 15 years here in New York with Darnold and Barkley playing in the same town for sure. So it's going to be fun to watch that. Let's finish the night out with the pass catchers. My two biggest buys, and then I'll kind of let you jump in with any thoughts on the running back position right now, are Tre'Quan Smith and Courtland Sutton. I think Tre'Quan Smith, the arrow is pointing way up with the injury to Ted Ginn. I think in that offense as number two, with teams worrying about Michael Thomas, with teams worrying about Alvin Kamara, I think Tre'Quan Smith's going to get behind defenses pretty regularly and make an impact. And Courtland Sutton, I'm expecting Demaryius Thomas to be traded within the next week. I think you have a 5 to 6 day window to go out and get Courtland Sutton on your dynasty roster right now. And maybe it takes a first round pick, but give me Courtland Sutton probably in that situation. Probably I'll take that over probably any of the wide receivers maybe coming out of this draft class, except maybe AJ Brown. And Courtland Sutton probably cost the owner who took him an early second round pick, maybe a late first. But if you could aggressively go get him now, I think you're going to start reaping the benefits a lot sooner than you might think if Demaryius Thomas has moved on. And even if he's not, he's not going to be on the roster next year, Demaryius Thomas. Courtland Sutton is going to be their starting X wide receiver next year. Go get him right now. Any thoughts on either Sutton or Smith or Calvin Ridley, DJ Moore, Michael Gallup, any guys that maybe you'd be going out and actively trying to buy right now? Is there anybody that maybe is playing over their head that you would sell? And any thoughts on the wide receiver position?
I don't think anybody's playing over their heads. When you look at Calvin Ridley, obviously the Julio Jones effect is big time there. Julio pulling three guys in coverage opens things up for Calvin. And Calvin's a talent. So you've got a very talented wide receiver who's able to get, mismatches, get single coverage. That's exactly what you want for your offense. I agree, Tre'Quan Smith. I was telling people to buy him weeks ago. Ginn's out. You saw him get something about 59 snaps. He's out snapping Cameron Meredith. Courtland Sutton, as you said, I agree. I don't know if it's probably Demaryius Thomas, but I don't know if Sanders or Sanders is there. Probably going to move on from one of them. The only issue being the quarterback play, but everything that you liked from Sutton in college, he's showing you a lot of that talent at the NFL level. He just needs more opportunity, more volume. DJ Moore, unfortunately, a lot of us got spoiled with that 2014 draft class where everybody hit, immediately big time seasons. Wide receivers they usually take some time to develop in the NFL. There's not these usual 1,000-yard, 10 touchdown seasons. So, I'm sure you can find owners who just get disappointed, and you can make a quick buy and get in on the ground floor and get them probably for less than it would have cost you on draft day.
Absolutely. I've been saying for weeks, guys that I'd be targeting by lows are Anthony Miller, DJ Moore, and James Washington. I mean, James Washington probably could be had, for a late second round pick, maybe even a third round pick, and like a player that could help in the immediate. You know, there might be owners of Anthony Miller who are really worried about Taylor Gabriel emerging more this year and, go out and get Anthony Miller. Christian Kirk right now, obviously Fitzgerald's still there. I mean, we've seen some pretty good games out of Kirk already, so I don't think his value is in any way lower than it was. If anything, it might be higher. But I still believe in him. I think he's Jarvis Landry 2.0 in terms of what he's going to be in terms of fantasy. I think he's going to be a locked and loaded every year, 90 catch type guy, once he's playing inside in the slot. DJ Moore, I think, is eventually going to emerge to be the most talented receiver in Carolina, but it just takes these guys time. And this is what we rewind back to last year on draft night. I know I jumped, I did the Saturday Sunday pod. I jumped on the Fantasy Joe's podcast and I said, give me Calvin Ridley over DJ Moore. And it was always about Calvin Ridley's not going to be asked to take the lead role. So much attention is going to go to Julio Jones that Calvin Ridley is going to get better matchups. And I think he's more pro ready because he's a better route runner. DJ Moore, I was a little worried about immediate production in that Carolina offense with Devin Funches, Christian McCaffrey, tight end heavy involved in Greg Olsen. And I think we're starting to see that. Now, I do think he should be working in and taking more playing time away from guys like Jarius Wright and Torrey Smith. And hopefully by the end of the year we do. But now's the opportunity to try to go get those guys. And one low under the radar buy cheap is I wouldn't mind going to get DJ Chark right now, because these Jacksonville wide receivers we've kind of seen this year, they could have some good weeks here or there, but they're pretty much all average. D.D. Westbrook shows a little bit more every once in a while. I'm not sure Dante Moncrief is going to be back on their team next year. I think there's a little bit of a role for DJ Chark. You would think they're going to hopefully try to upgrade the quarterback position in the offseason if possible. I think DJ Chark could be had for pretty cheap right now, and he'd be a guy that I'd love to get on my team and just kind of stash him away. And then the tight end position, one name. I don't have to go for any of the big guys. Right now, if you're a believer in Hurst, Gesicki, or Dallas Goedert, go get them now. Their value is cheap. Hurst is playing with four other tight ends in Baltimore. Gesicki is like splitting time with guys, a bunch of marginal talent players with Miami. And Dallas Goedert has obviously got a deal with Zach Ertz. So you can probably get those guys all cheaper than what they cost you on draft day. But Christopher Herndon is a guy I wanted to mention. Another impressive performance from him. Four catches, 42 yards, and a touchdown. He's emerging to be a guy that Donald relies on and looks to. I think he's a guy that tight end premium leagues, two tight end leagues, he shouldn't be sitting out there in any dynasty league. Go out and get Christopher Herndon. Any thoughts on the tight ends? Is there one in particular that you would say, I'd love to go get him on my roster right now? He doesn't maybe cost too much, but I'm still a big time believer that he's going to be, you know, potentially a tight end one in fantasy down the line.
The one guy I really like is Dallas Goedert, but the issue being that Zach Ertz is such a superstar in front of him. The only thing that I could maybe see happening is Ertz salary cap comes to a push. You're going to eventually going to have to pay Carson Wentz. Does that make them move on from Ertz? His salary cap, kind of what happens up there?
Yeah, I mean, Ertz is one of those guys. I don't see Ertz going away anytime soon. So Goddard is more of an investment for the future. Like if you have one of those teams that you could kind of sit on a player for a couple years before he really hits it, I think that's probably going to be Goddard. I would say I'd feel pretty confident Ertz is going to be a part of the Eagles for at least two more years after this. So you're really waiting in the wings there. But you know what? Maybe by next year or the year after, they started incorporating more two tight end sets. I know it's rare for two tight ends to be tight end viable. We've seen some instances where it's possible, you know, with, you know, we saw Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski. You know, I think this year, you know, with Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron, if Doyle was healthy, I think we might have seen two guys in the top 15, you know, based on the lack of pass catchers there for the Colts. So maybe, you know, it's not like the Philadelphia Eagles have a great third option. It's Alshon Jeffrey. It's Zach Ertz. I'm not a huge Nelson Aguilar fan. So maybe, you know, maybe next year he starts being incorporated a little bit more. They play more two tight end sets. It's something to keep in the back of your mind. And teams are going to start to get frustrated. You know, some owners aren't willing to wait two or three years to get production. And I think check in with those owners and try to get them and take advantage of those owners that are a little bit antsy and don't want to wait. So with that said, there's the NFL draft report. I mean, the NFL rookie report for this past week. Excellent stuff, Pete. So excited that you were able to join me. Let the listeners know where they can find your work, what you're working on, and anything else you kind of want to push.
You can listen to my podcast, Dynasty Yak. You know, me, Levi, Andrew, we talk about Dynasty Devi a little bit. You can find my work over at DynastyLeagueFootball.com and NumberFire. And over on Twitter, you can follow me at _PeteLaw. And this week, I'm going to try and actually break down some of the new top five wide receivers that I'm looking at in Dynasty. As there's been quite a big shift, I feel like.
Yeah, everyone, make sure you're checking out his work. Make sure you're following him on Twitter. Make sure you're checking out the podcast. Excellent source of information. Great takes. Highly recommended. So on behalf of Pete, on behalf of Matt, who is looking and excited to hopefully get back on the pod soon, and our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the games this upcoming weekend, and we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.